I started podcasting the night Anthony Bourdain died, in June of 2018. It was a knee-jerk reaction, in search for the connection I felt his death had taken with him. Also, in search for the connection to his legacy, of a seemingly welcoming and vast world he opened us up to. Single-handedly, he had made the world accessible, and deactivated an ingrained anxiety in the mass American audience. A mass American audience that had been systematically conditioned to be suspicious of others and feel supreme to all. Through his work, Bourdain connected people. The food was the excuse to travel and meet horizons unknown, without fear and always leading with curiosity. His death was a call to action for me. Podcasting was not on my radar, but the stakes were low, and if I could get over myself and lead with my own curiosity, I knew this could be a great vehicle to forge my own connections and embark on my own adventures. Since starting Studio Confessions, my favorite part of connecting with people through my podcast has been inviting my guests into my studio, my home, and sitting face to face after coffee or tea, and letting the conversation flow. On several occasions, I even traveled to them, a perfect excuse, I figured, to travel the U.S. My conversations have taken me to exotic domestic destinations like Orlando, Seattle, and San Francisco, among others. When the pandemic hit, I, like everyone else, had to pivot if I wanted my podcast to survive. The most exciting part of my podcast seemed impossible now, and most disturbing to me was that my vehicle, the one I had been crafting so thoughtfully to explore the world, had come to a halt. But my curiosity still overflowed. My mind raced with ideas and connections I wanted to make. So I broke my self-imposed rule and started interviewing people through Skype. Yep, Skype. Sitting in front of my computer in my apartment. And guess what? The world opened up. My self-imposed limitation, which had served its purpose to keep my focus and discipline in podcasting, was now useless. Now, my curiosity, my net, could cast a greater reach. The formula changed, and while it scared me and made no sense to me, it equated to new opportunities in the new context of our new world. The following conversation with the artist Alexander Ehrman would not have happened before. Like usual, I stumbled upon his work on Instagram, and I was instantly moved and touched by it. He was someone I needed to connect with. When we connected, I learned he was in St. Petersburg, Russia. Before the pandemic, I would have to think really long and hard about it, but eventually my curiosity would have won over. Traveling to Russia? Heck yeah. But logistically, I would have had to put things in motion, and it would have taken months, if not years, to get there. Now, I can invite him in my studio on the podcast via Skype the day after we initially communicated on Instagram. It's a new world. While we're forced to be sedimentary, sheltered in place, our nets of imagination, ingenuity, and will can still cast vast reaches. Emotionally, it's not been easy, but these conversations with artists and culture makers are part of my formula for survival, to find joy. My goal is to remind myself that there are awesome people out there making the world turn, and that I'm not alone on this art vibe, and sharing their awesomeness with you is the biggest part of it. This is my conversation with Alexander Ehrman, whom I hope to meet in Russia or in New York sometime in the near future. But for now,
this is Studio Confessions, the art podcast. I am your host, Luis Martin, the art engineer. Listen in for conversations with artists and culture makers as we talk about their creative practice and what moves them. Let me share my wax poetic monologues and how to activate your creativity to live an inspired and more beautiful life. That's right, I said beautiful. Welcome to the studio. I'm glad you're here.
Hey, Alexander, how are you?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you.
Where are you joining us from?
I'm in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Goodness, and what is that like right now? What is your environment like right now?
Environment, I'm in my studio. I was at work, you know, I'm dirty hands.
Nice. Can you describe your art? What do you do?
For now, at the moment, I cast one sculpture in concrete and still in molding in form, and I sculpting two clay sculptures for exhibition maybe in future.
Your work is, it's almost surreal.
surreal, sometimes more or less, because, you know, behind me, it's a figurative sculpture. I'm looking for my language like this.
What do you look at for inspiration? What informs the type of language you create?
Difficult to say in one word, you know. Actually, I would like to make something, you know, at first it's a little bit aesthetic. It's sure. Aesthetic. So it should be aesthetical form, but with a meaning, you know, some sort of meaning, my own meaning, because I have a lot of stuff to say, but I'm now looking for proper language to express. You know? Not simple, maybe.
What's your first memory of art when you were a kid or an adult? What was that like?
Actually, my parents are sculptors, both of my parents, father and mother. I grew up in this situation, you know. I have a lot of books. I remember their studio. It was a small studio in downtown, and they always sculpt, you know, this smells of clay, all this stuff. So I grew up in this.
Wow, that's amazing. And what is the biggest impression of their work on you? Is there a connection, you think?
I think it is a connection. I am very impressed. You know, my father, it was Soviet times, and it was a factory of sculpture. You know, it's a real big factory which made huge sculptures for government purpose. And he made a huge bas relief. It's like about 15 meters long, you know, and 5 meters high. And I was a child, he took me just right to help him, but actually what can I do? But it was impressive, you know, the sculpture factory.
Wow.
And it was not about, quite creative. It wasn't about just, you know, communist stuff, no. So they let people actually express themselves too, more or less.
It's a very different experience here in the United States because there is no real space for art as far as a job or part of our political imagery. It's for us, I think for the United States, art is still very mysterious, you know? So it's very exciting to hear that your parents had a very stable place to put their art.
It was before. When Soviet Union collapsed, it was over also. Because now we have, I guess, similar situation with you. And I can't say it's bad, no. I think it's okay, because maybe more freedom.
That's interesting. What did your parents do after the collapse? Did they continue making art? And what did that look like?
They continue to make smaller stuff and teaching. My mother still teaching in art school, and father is kind of retired, so giving advice like this. So.
What's the biggest lesson that you can take away from having parents who are artists?
Biggest lesson, actually, it's a lot of they was and they are like my first teachers, so it is a lot of lessons. I can remember that my father said that when I was a child, I drew something, and he said that you rather make it curve or maybe not right, but bold, you know, brave. I mean, not try to make it right with a, you know, with a shaking hand. Nice. I want to make it right, but my hand is shaking. Not to do this. Just make it bold. Let it be not right, but bold, like this.
That's good advice for life too, right?
Actually, but not when you're driving a car.
Can I ask you about your material? Did you kind of discover the material with your parents, or did you explore new material later on in life?
Yeah, I'm exploring new material, and at first it is a wood. I discovered the wood for me, and I love it a lot. Wood, it's like my, you know, my love, because I can express, right, just take a material and direct carving, and I'm express myself. But sometimes, for now, I start to sculpt again, because I want to research something, just to looking for maybe something new, new shapes, new forms. And that's why I sculpt now. And I'm trying to sculpt and cast in concrete, which is also new material for me also. I'm just trying today, second day.
Nice. It's really exciting to see your space, that you have a lot of space to kind of play around and create these amazing pieces that take space, because sculpture is about three-dimensional form, right?
Yeah.
Being in St. Petersburg, how has that affected your work?
How is that affected? Or
yeah, how does it influence? How does it influence your work, do you think? Being a Russian artist, in your language, in the type of art you create.
Yeah, because, you know, St. Petersburg, it's have a strong traditions, because it is a former capital of Russian Empire, you know, and so here is a big history of art, and for sure it make an influence. I mean, how exactly? Maybe, you know, maybe 20th century, last century, and it was 20s, like 1920s. It was abstract art, Kandinsky, Malevich, all of those people worked in here, you know. And if you still visit a Russian museum, we have this Russian museum, you have still see them, like Black Square, for example, it is in here, you know. So this make an effect.
It's interesting also that you have a connection to history that you can talk about and put in your artwork. When we talk about art history in the United States, it tends to stop in the 40s and the 20s, right? So it's an interesting conversation that you get to have with your identity as an artist, as a person from Russia. That's really interesting how that plays out. What is the ideal place for your work to live after it leaves your studio?
Well, I work for public art. Some of my sculptures are staying stone sculpture, wood sculpture, placed on public spaces. But also it is for, you know, maybe it's for apartment, or maybe for, you know, public spaces, but inside, like, you know, some centers where people are walking, maybe trade centers or something. My sculptures need a little bit more space because they're pretty big.
Do people buy art in Russia? Is it part of the culture to buy art from artists?
Unfortunately not.
Okay.
Unfortunately not. I make my living with commissions.
Fantastic.
Commissions. People may make commissions, and they if they build something, they want to make something what they want, not what you want.
Sure.
You want. So we used to do this.
Can you tell me about the sculpture behind you? It's what I saw on Instagram that caught my eye, which is a male figure with a sphere on his hand, and it almost looks like the world. It could be a basketball. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, it is a this sculpture is about achievement, a person who want to achieve something. Maybe it is in sport, maybe it is in, you know, space, maybe he touching a moon, you know, or planet or something. Just about person who want to make his goal, achieve his goal.
That's very cool. It's such an interesting figure. Also, I saw that you had another one of a wing. with a hand coming out of it.
Sorry, with a hand? Which one?
It was a figure with a wing, with an arm coming out of it. It was very abstract. It was on your Instagram. It might be a little older, perhaps. But there was something very loose about it and very abstract. I'm wondering, when you create your sculptures, how do you go about creating the form? Is it something that you just draw, or do you have models, or is it something that just comes from your imagination, a concept?
It is from my imagination. I start to draw smaller drawings when I have some idea. Maybe some idea came from text. Uh-huh. I hear some text or I read some text, and I just thinking about it, and I remember it a lot of time. For example, I had a work which it is a sitting person behind the wall and a graffiti on the backside. It was inspired by, you know, Michelangelo poetry, Night. It is sculpture Night. And he wrote a poem Don't Wake Me Up, like this. So I remember these words. And then I started to draw, came to this composition. So it is a long story.
That's very nice. So you get inspired by literature, you put it into your work. What else goes into your work, you think, that influences you? Are you influenced by music, by landscape, by other artists, perhaps?
Landscapes, yes. Sometimes I even tried to sculpt landscapes. So landscapes may be very interesting in sculpture. And I'm even engaged to take part in a big show in Russian Museum. Maybe next year's it will be. It calls Landscape in Sculpture.
Nice.
So, I have a sculpture which was chosen for this. And they printing a catalog. But when will be this show? I don't know, but maybe next year. So landscape sculpture and others, for sure, a lot of sculptors. I like a lot of sculptors in Instagram, for example. Also, I looking always looking what's new, and a lot of sculptors I've found. And for example, this Mexican sculptor Javier Martin, he's making big shows. I don't remember right now, but. It is a lot of sculptors I found in Instagram. And for sure, it's older classical sculpture also from Greece, you know, and painting, so impressionism, all the same.
Can you tell me a little bit about what it's like outside for you right now during this pandemic?
This pandemic, so I'm isolated, you know, I'm in studio.
Yeah.
I took I driving a bicycle today. I took a bicycle, which is also quite isolating. Well, but we have lockdown, yes. So we are all supposed to be at home or at least not contact each other, and all public places are closed. All the same, just people who, you know, need to go to work anyway, because what should they do? So that's me also, you know, I have to go to work.
So have you been able to stay creative and be in a good place in your mind to create work? Because I know sometimes it can be a scary moment and people get anxious. Do you find peace in your work?
I'm not that anxious, actually. And, you know, yeah, we know all this news, but, you know, people in here are not that believers, you know, and maybe a little bit. Maybe it's a little bit crazy, but the people mostly calming down because, you know, it's not so big number right now. Maybe that's why. Maybe it will be. Maybe we just have to wait for it. I don't want to, but I don't know what. But right now, people just thinking maybe. It's more politic than a real virus. You know?
Wow, that's so interesting because I'm in New York and it's a complete opposite. This is, I can't leave my apartment without a mask. You know, like even if I'm going to go check my mail, I have to wear a mask. So it's interesting to hear how different the experiences are depending where you are. Even in the United States, if you're in Texas or in Los Angeles, it's a different experience than if you're in New York. New York is very scary right now. So in New York, I talk about anxiety because in our American conversation, anxiety is a big presence. It's something we talk about a lot. Oh, I feel anxious. So now that there's actually something to feel anxious about, I'm interested to see how people are coping. So it's great to hear that you're cool because you need to stay creative.
No, some people are really scared, you know, but not me. I don't know.
Well, I love that you're on your hammock, staying cool. Now, let me ask you, what else are you doing to keep yourself motivated in quarantine? If you're still stuck at home, what are you reading? What are you watching? What are you listening to?
When all this stuff, quarantine, just started, I was completely demotivated. It was like apocalyptic something. I was demotivated and frustrated. And, you know, I make sculptures and I was thinking, who will need these sculptures anymore, you know? Because, you know, everybody are staying home and maybe digital art, it is on the, you know, but not sculpture. Why sculpture? So I thought that maybe I should study something, you know, digital, and I start to research. But then I get a call from a museum, another one museum, local, and they said, you know that we're planning an exhibition next autumn. So maybe you have some work, or maybe you can make some work for us. And it was motivated. It was motivating, you know, because I understand that somebody needed, you know, even it's not no non-profit, just for art's sake, but it's still, you know, life still going on.
Absolutely. And I feel that sculpture in particular is stronger. You know, I make collages, I paint. With time, with water, with fire, it disappears. You're working with really hardy material that will stand the test of time without much help. So yeah, please, you have to. You have to make art. You have to leave proof that we were here. What do you want your proof of existence to be like? What sentiment, what ideas do you want your work to convey?
You know, any other work convey different ideas. Actually, I want to bring something, you know, very positive. It's just before I made some, you know, surreal stuff, maybe something even spooky sometimes. Mm-hmm. But now I want to make something positive because I realize that a lot of tough things in the world, you know. That's why I made this guy with a ball, you know, just to motivate people also. Motivate myself and motivate people, just to show that everything might be good, you know. Get some bright, you know, light. I mean, in life.
Absolutely. Like this. I appreciate that totally. Now, let me ask you: if when this is all over and someone sends you a ticket to go anywhere in the world, where would you go?
So many places I would like to go. No, perhaps New York.
All right. Well, we'll wait for you here. Well, Alexander, thank you so much for connecting with me. Thank you so much for allowing us into your studio. It's been such a pleasure to speak to you, even for a few minutes, and learn about what you do. And I'm glad you're making art that's going to lift us up, because I think we need it right now. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's it. Thanks for listening. If you heard anything that moved you, please share it. You are the spark that can ignite 1,000 flames. I am Luis Martin, the art engineer, sharing with you what moves me.